So, hello and welcome to the inaugural episode of Pensions on Tap from Shoesmiths, the podcast to air our thoughts about what's going on in the world of pensions. I'm Lynette Lewis, a partner in the Shoesmiths pensions team, and I have the pleasure of hosting our first ever episode. Over the course of this and future episodes, my colleagues and I will provide you with a short insight into the latest hot topics and changes in UK pensions law. Long enough to give you the basics and short enough to enjoy over a coffee break. So grab your brew of choice and let's get on to it. Today, we're going to be talking about the government's proposed new rules on transfer requests to help curb pension scams. And I'm joined by my colleague and fellow partner, Julian Richards.
Hello.
So pension scams have been a troublesome area for trustees and scheme managers for a number of years now. They've too often faced the difficult task of weighing the risk of a pension scam against a member's statutory right to transfer. And until now, the legislation has done very little to help trustees make that choice. The position has been no less frustrating for members who variously feel like trustees are doing too much or didn't do enough, depending on whether their transfer suffered a delay or resulted in the loss of their retirement savings. So last month, draft regulations were published for consultation, which might just help trustees work out where the balance lies. So Julian, it's been a few weeks now since the draft Occupational and Personal Pension Schemes Conditions for Transfer Regulations, as with all pensions regulations, they roll off the tongue, don't they, were published. So can you tell me a little bit more about them?
Yes, happy to, Lynette. The draft regulations essentially create four categories for a transfer for members. Firstly, where transfer is to one of a prescribed low-risk scheme, such as an authorised master trust or schemes provided by regulated insurers. Secondly, where the transfer would be to an occupational, UK-based occupational scheme. Thirdly, transfers to QROPS, the qualifying recognised overseas pension schemes. And then fourthly, basically anything and everything else. For the first category, as long as the trustees of the transferring scheme can establish that the receiving scheme is one of the schemes prescribed in the regulations, which also include public sector schemes, then effectively that's job done for the trustees and no further checks will be necessary. The second category, transfers to a UK-based occupational scheme, requires a similarly light-touch approach. Transfers will be allowed to proceed, provided that the member can demonstrate an employment link between them and the scheme, which the slightly spurious employment links have been one of the banes of the regulator's life with pension scams up to this point. It's only really when we get to the third and fourth categories that the checks for trustees start to get a little bit more involved and a little bit more onerous. As with a UK-based scheme, if a member requests a transfer to a QROP and that's linked to an occupational scheme, then it will be sufficient for the member to show an employment link. However, if the QROPS is not an occupational scheme or the member can't show an employment link, then they must be able to show that they are resident in the same financial jurisdiction as the receiving scheme and have been so for the past 6 months. In category four, the everything else category, the fate of the transfer request will be dictated by a newly introduced red and amber flag regime. If a red flag is present, then the transfer can't proceed. If an amber flag is present, then the trustees must refer the member to the Money and Pensions Service for guidance. And the transfer can only proceed once the member provides evidence that they have taken that guidance. So from nothing to something very prescriptive, I think. What do you make of it, Lynette?
In a lot of ways, I think it's going to be really helpful to trustees. It definitely gives them a very clear process to follow and tangible grounds on which to prevent a questionable transfer from going ahead, which they can then easily point members to. Members might not like it, but it will save a lot of headaches on both sides going forwards, I think. But I have heard some commentary that the proposed new rules will be an administrative burden. I'm not sure I completely agree with that. The rules provide a pretty much ready-made checklist for administrators, and I expect many schemes will benefit from a unified and streamlined approach, which will hopefully see administrators dealing with more cases under their delegated powers and therefore less cases being referred back to the trustee board, which in the end will have to help free up time for trustees for other issues. Bit of a concern that administrators might use this to incur, you know, effectively rack up additional costs. But let's see where we get to with that. But the one thing I see as being potentially tricky is a residency link for overseas transfers. A substantial proportion of the potential scam transfers we're asked to review for our clients, either before the transfer takes place or as part of a complaint, concern receiving schemes in other jurisdictions. And at first glance, I'm not sure the new rules would stop those scams in their tracks. Just because a lot of those transfers involve a pension scam doesn't mean that they all do. So a member in one jurisdiction could have a perfectly good reason to transfer to a legitimate scheme in another jurisdiction, and there doesn't seem to be any flexibility in the draft regulations to deal with that particular sort of issue.
I think you're right, Lynette, and I suspect that that's probably going to be one of the key themes for the consultation responses. There is a risk, though, of introducing more flexibility here than is necessary. It is, as you say, as you suggest, one of the more problematic areas, and because of that, it's very difficult for trustees to manage. If greater flexibility is introduced, the clear-cut guidance and protection offered to trustees by the draft regulations can become muddled, and that can leave them in the same position as they are now. So it's a balancing act, and I suppose which way the scale tips will depend on which is the greater of the demand for genuine overseas transfers when there's no residency link and the risk of unwitting savers being caught by a pension scam.
Okay, I guess to some extent we're just going to have to wait and see what happens on that. But what do you think about this idea of the red and amber flags? They sort of look to me like a repeat of what we've seen in the past in terms of the various codes and pieces of guidance issued by the relevant regulatory authorities, but they're sort of basically putting them onto a statutory footing. Do you think that's going to make the assessment of transfers that aren't into those first three categories any easier for trustees, i.e., you know, category four? Do you think that's going to become easier or not?
The warning signs that form the red and amber flags in category four are very familiar. But I think there are two key points which will make life easier for trustees. Firstly, the red flag allows them to justifiably prevent a transfer, and that's been an issue for trustees for years when they don't want to, they don't think it's right to transfer, provide a transfer for members, but the member insists and there's no way to prevent that. So, and the ability to point to a reason when delivering that news to members will make the process hopefully a lot smoother. And secondly, where there's an amber flag, the burden on trustees to effectively assess the legitimacy of the receiving scheme will be significantly decreased. If an amber flag exists, trustees have to refer the member to MAPS, and the member must prove that they've sought MAPS guidance before the transfer can proceed. If the member can't or won't provide that evidence, that becomes a red flag. I guess my only slight concern here is that MAPS can only give guidance, they can't give advice. So it will be interesting to see how that develops.
Yeah, so thanks for that, Julian. I can see where you're coming from. So if we look at some of the examples of the flags, so a transfer request following a cold call, that's a red flag. A receiving scheme having unclear or high charges, that's an amber flag. It sort of strikes me that the problem might be identifying the flags in the first place could be difficult. Because historically, one of the main difficulties trustees have faced with pension scams is actually getting to that sort of information. Sometimes the questions are just not asked in the transfer documentation, which is an easy fix. But even where it is, sometimes members don't provide the information requested. So in that sense, I'm sort of struggling to see how the new rules make it easier for trustees for these types of transfers. Okay, you could say that administrators should make further inquiries if they suspect a red or amber flag might exist. But if that's the approach, I'm sort of starting to see that administrators actually might put more burden back on the trustees and that might creep up.
Yes, I can certainly see that once you start digging a bit deeper, the rules aren't necessarily the magic fix that at first glance they might seem, and trustees could end up with increasing regulatory burden. But we know that the reality for most schemes is that legitimate transfers are really going to fall into the first two categories, transfers to one of the prescribed low-risk schemes or to an occupational scheme. But these transfers have never really been a problem. The most problematic overseas transfers will be caught by the residency link requirement, assuming that stays in place, but there will still be a certain amount of digging for trustees to do for transfers which fall into the fourth category, the red and amber flag regime. So the draft regulations really take us much further forwards?
I think the answer to that has to be yes, because ultimately trustees will be able to point to the law to say either we can't process your transfer or we can't process your transfer until you provide us with the further information that we require. At the moment, the law doesn't back them up at all. And that, coupled with the risk of not allowing members to exercise their statutory right to transfer, has meant that a lot of questionable transfers have actually proceeded, which might have been caught if these rules had been in place sooner.
I definitely think that's right. It will, like everything, take some time to get used to for trustees at a time when they're constantly trying to get used to new things. But I do think the new rules will save schemes and members a lot of time eventually, and a lot of money and a lot of heartache, hopefully too. But for now, I guess we will have to just wait and see what happens once the government has considered the responses to the consultation.
Indeed. So that consultation closed on the 10th of June, and there's no word yet on when the response will be issued. But the government hopes to have the new regulations in place sometime this autumn. So that's all for today. Thanks for joining us for the first episode of Shoesmiths on Tap. If you want to find out more about the pensions team here at Shoesmiths and the services we offer, please go to www.shoesmiths.co.uk/expertise/services/pensions. Or you can email any queries relating to today's topic to us at pensionspsl@shoesmiths.co.uk. Bye for now and take care.